This is Will's Band of the Week for June 23rd, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will along with Barrett.
Hello.
And Chris.
Good evening, listeners.
Oh, a little more dignified this evening. Yeah.
That's become one of our trademarks.
Yes.
Is Barrett with the disregard. And then we're like, what's Chris going to say?
But I know. Millions of people are sitting at home waiting to see what I'm going to say.
I was.
And now that they've heard it, maybe they'll just turn it off. But hopefully not. You wouldn't want to miss.
It's downhill from here.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to miss the music that awaits. So before we go further, let's tell people you can subscribe from iTunes. And if you like the podcast, you can even post a review. Now, you could post one if you don't like it, but we suggest you not do that. To subscribe from iTunes, just find the podcast on iTunes. You can search the iTunes store for Will's Band of the Week. You'll find it there. You can also go to the website willsband.net or the Facebook page, which is called The Will's Band of the Week Podcast. And if you prefer private communication, send us an email, willsband@yahoo.com. So, got any music news this week, you guys?
I read that Radiohead's got a new album coming out, possibly even by the end of this year.
Yeah, just sort of out of the blue, it came over the music news wire. And the guitar player said, it's the best they've ever done. So he set the bar high.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that where it didn't end up then to be true, you know?
It's got to be true, yeah.
Yeah, people are very honest in giving assessments of their forthcoming album. How's this one going to be, Will?
Right.
I don't know.
I've never heard somebody say, it's really not as good as our best work, but hopefully some people will like it.
It'd fit right in with our lesser works.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the bad albums, then you might like this one. Okay.
If you like bands that kind of sound like us, but kind of really suck, you'll probably like this album a great deal. So are they going to do the whole pay what you want thing again? That seemed to work out okay for them.
I didn't see any.
I think they're not. I think I saw a reference that or maybe it was just quoting them from the past saying they weren't going to do that again, but they just wanted to make a statement that the whole music industry is messed up.
Did I tell you the story about how I'm an international man of finance and how I ended up paying a great deal of money for the last Radiohead album?
No, how did you manage to do that?
Well, they had the make a donation page, and so I get on there, and I was like, well, I would have paid $10 for this, but they only had it in pounds, in British pounds. So I was trying to run through my head how exactly the British pounds translated into American dollars, and I thought, well, I think it's like half, so 20 British pounds will equal 10 American dollars. So I go ahead and I pay 20 pounds for it, and then I see my credit card charge for $40.
Wow.
I was the wrong way. It was
I hope you liked the album a lot.
I did like it a lot, although knowing I could have had it for free and I paid $40 for it, I think Radiohead should give me some kind of... There's got to be some way they can track that. Give me some kind
you
of
should,
award.
Yeah, I think you should be able to email them. Say, this is obviously a mistake.
Yeah.
And I would like to get the new one. Give me the new one.
Sure. I think I should be able to do that.
Advanced copy, maybe.
And when this last one came out, actually in the physical copy in the stores, I think they had like a super advanced, somehow, you know, super copy that was $40-$50 or something like that. So
I
could have gotten that with the same money, but instead it just... it went straight into Tom York's pocket. So
yeah,
that was interesting, wasn't it? You know, when they say pay whatever you want, I think I was cheap and I paid him like a dollar or something, just figuring I should pay something. But yet I felt like they were sort of giving it away anyway.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I know Nine Inch Nails did that with one of their albums with their most recent.
They did that recently, and I thought, you know, I'd never buy a Nine Inch Nails album, but it's free, so I might as well download it. And I never even got through the whole thing once, and I just deleted it because I just said, I'm not going to listen to this.
Everything they've done since 94. 4, which is when the Downward Spiral came out, was has been complete garbage. However, the last one that they gave away for free was actually pretty good.
Hmm.
I mean, in contrast with their recent releases, I actually thought it was not bad.
So they had an album called Downward Spiral?
Yeah. Yes.
It was, and that precipitated their Downward Spiral?
It was prescient, yes.
They should make their new wow. one should be like Resurgence.
Yeah.
with a bullet.
Right.
So there you go.
Yep.
Well, we thought we'd do another music grab bag or variety pack or whatever you want to call it. Because, again, we didn't have a consensus album, but we've always got lots of music to talk about. It's just that we can't always convince the other two to talk about it. So we have to come on the podcast and everybody has to make their case for their picks. Right?
Right. This week, you know, one of the bands that we talked about doing, I don't know if Chris got into it, Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. I don't know if Will spent any time with that at all. But I listened to especially the first half a good deal. And I didn't treat it like a full-on assignment because it's kind of a grab bag, but I got real familiar with the first half. And I liked it a lot.
Well, as a matter of fact, that was one I was going to play tonight. Yeah. So we'll talk about that one.
Oh, la-di-da.
La-di-da. Did you listen to it, Chris?
I gave it a listen. Yeah. I thought it was okay. I mean, just, you know, as much as I like anything for the first time. So.
Right. My first couple of listens were passive, and then there'd be little parts in there. I'm like, what was that?
Yeah.
On that second song, where they're kind of playing, and then they have this little sound effect, and some guy just yells out, cheer up, or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure the specific
what
part.
What is that?
I know the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, this isn't the format, I don't think, where I just start spouting off about something random. So let's be more organized about it.
Well, I like this format because it's, you know, if somebody's listening to the podcast, then maybe somewhere in there's something that they like, as opposed to just, you know, if there's a band that they don't like, then, you know, we quickly move on to something else. So,
right.
Instead of just having one band.
Well, I mean, like the way that I'm introducing it right now isn't the way to do it.
But, you know, so, like, we don't have to be that professional, right? I mean, we can be like a free-form FM station.
Play some Ariel Pink right
there
now.
There are no rules here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Barrett's kind of led us into this. So, yeah, this guy's name, I mean, I guess his name is Ariel Pink, but I don't think he was born with the name Ariel Pink. In fact, he wasn't. I just realized I had written this down. His original name was actually Ariel Rosenberg, but now he's known as Ariel Pink. And he's from Los Angeles, and for the past several years, he's been putting out sort of lo-fi home recordings, and I had heard the name before. Had you heard the name?
I had not heard the name.
I think Pitchfork reviewed a few of his things, and I think they were just called Ariel Pink, and there might have been one or two that were called Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. And it's kind of that sort of hard to grasp, pretty creative, but kind of all over the place. Kind of stuff where, you know, if you're sort of looking for something good, maybe if you listen to, you know, 8 songs, you'll find one or two that have a little nugget of you know, catchiness. But apparently he sent a demo to Animal Collective, and that's how he sort of got his start. And their label called Paw Tracks released some of these sort of lo-fi home recordings. And now he's on 4AD, and he has sort of a real band, I guess, called Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. And they put out an album called Before Today. It's been getting pretty good reviews, so I thought I'd listen to it. And Barrett thought he'd listen to it a little bit, too. And it's pretty interesting. It's one of those things where on first listen, you kind of just think, I don't know what this guy's going for. But it reveals some interesting stuff. Let's play that second track, Barrett, you were talking about. It's called Bright Lit Blue Skies. It's kind of a retro pop kind of track.
Well, I'm so far from the girl.
Yeah, it's. I think it's got a nice vocal part to it. It's got that 70s AM mellow groove thing going on.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be on like a Halloween album, like in between like the Monster Mash and.
I don't even know what that means, but it was funny.
And this does have quite a bit of variety on it. I'd like to play a couple other little pieces. The next one is, I'd say, the Guided by Voices reference. Listen to this one. It's called Butthouse Blondies. Yeah, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I think the Guided by Voices references is appropriate there. That's one of Will's specialties, is spotting the GBV
right.
influence. We all have our little things.
Right, exactly. Know? Yeah, and most things that are either considered lo-fi or kind of have that reference usually get compared to Guided by Voices, and usually there's a reason for it, I think. They're kind of the fathers of lo-fi, I think. So there's one more, and I know I'm cheating by playing three, but I had to play a piece of this one because I don't know if Barrett made it this far, because this is track 9, but this one sounds like Hall & Oates, so I had to play a little piece of this one.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like Private Eyes.
Yeah, it does.
Well, it could be any number of like late 70s bands.
Yeah. Right.
It'd be like a Christopher Cross song or something.
It's your lo-fi Hall & Oates, Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. So it's an interesting album. 12 tracks, and they're kind of... I'd say the first one we played is probably the most representative of the album, but there's a lot of variety on there. It's a pretty fun album.
Yeah, I'd say I listened to the whole thing through probably 3 times and then kind of concentrated on the beginning. And I don't know if you guys think this about some albums, but you're like, you know, I like this about an EP length's worth. You know, if this had been 5 songs, that would be great. But I don't need to invest. How long? What's the running time on this?
Almost 45 minutes.
Yeah, okay. I can give this about 25 minutes. And then I need something else.
My favorite example of that is the second Iron and Wine CD.
Yeah.
Because it's... And what's odd is I love every even-numbered song. So, it like, you know, it takes a good half an album and stretches every other song. So every even-numbered song on that album, I think, are my favorites.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you have it.
You couldn't go first half and second half, though. Then you had to...
Right.
You had to manually adjust.
Right.
Yeah.
But if we were in the old days and, you know, I had to listen to a record, I'd probably listen to them all the way through. But now, you know, in this digital age or whatever you kids call it, you know, you put on an iPod playlist or whatever. And
yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yep.
You
well,
I was going to mention that whenever I'm looking for my iPod, like if I'm going to, like, heading out the door, I'm like, JJ, where's my Walkman? I still say that. I'm not even being like, you know, I'm not even kidding. That's just what I feel like it is. It's my Walkman.
Did we ever talk about the Tom Scholz Rockman amplifier on this podcast?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you guys know Tom Scholz, right? He was the mastermind of the band Boston, and he put out a little guitar amp. They made this little guitar amp that was shaped like a Sony Walkman, only it was called a Rockman. And if you plugged your guitar into that thing and listened through headphones, it was instant Boston. You sounded like Boston.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, you know, obviously pretty much a novelty, but it was very funny. I had a friend who had one. It's like,
cool.
Yeah, you turn yourself into Boston.
I think at some point they tried to make an electric guitar that actually had the amp like in the body, like there was a speaker on the guitar.
I think they've made those. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But you can't make it, you know, that you can't make it sound any good. That's
right.
The problem.
Right.
Yeah.
That's for if you don't have anything else.
Yeah. All right. Well, I bet Chris has something to tell us about, so let's turn it over to him.
I do. For my album, I picked this. This has actually been out a few months now, but I'm a big fan of Brandi Carlile, so I picked her most recent, which is called Give Up the Ghost, and I believe this is her third album, and the other two are outstanding, too. I had a friend in Austin that kind of turned me on to her. So her voice is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's one of the best singing voices, I think, working right now. But I listened to her last couple albums, loved them. And people seem to think that she is lesbian music. And that might be because she's a lesbian. But it got me to thinking about what the whole idea of, like, what is lesbian music? It seems that something becomes lesbian music as soon as they find out that the singer is a lesbian. That's really the only definition. Then it somehow fits into the genre of lesbian music, which is bizarre to me.
Yeah. I have another definition.
Okay.
Something that Chris likes. Because you like a lot of that stuff. You do tend to like, and you've mentioned that yourself.
Well, I mean, when you think of lesbian music, you think of like Indigo Girls and Melissa Etheridge. And
right.
I actually went online. I like typed in lesbian music into Google, and apparently there's a list of like the 25 lesbian album or 25 albums every lesbian must own, and 12 of them were either Indigo Girls, Melissa Etheridge, or Katie Lang.
Oh yeah. Right.
So
yeah.
So this is what confuses me though. I mean, there are plenty of gay male singers, but we don't think of. I mean, nobody thinks of REM as like gay music.
No.
Or yeah, that's true.
Bob Mould or Husker Du.
Right.
You know, that's not gay music. But suddenly, as soon as a female singer says she's gay,
right.
Immediately it becomes like lesbian music.
That is kind of strange. We were talking about Lilith Fair a couple podcasts ago, right?
Right.
And probably a lot of those artists are there, but a lot of them would probably not be in that specific category, right? Sarah McLachlan? I think she's married or wasn't
on this married. On this list, the lesbian must-haves, Sarah McLachlan is on there. And it says,
okay.
Well, she's not lesbian. But, and that's, yeah. That brings up another point. Can non-lesbians make lesbian music?
Yeah, apparently they can.
Because clearly, only lesbians can... Or once you're a lesbian, you can make nothing but lesbian music. I mean, can you think of any known lesbian that makes what's considered to be non-lesbian music?
How about... Tegan and Sarah.
Lesbian music.
Okay. Well, that's kind of
I was talking to a girl, and she was sitting there with her iPod. She's a lesbian, and she was sitting there with her iPod. I was like, I bet you I can tell you what's on that iPod. Or I said, I said, what's on, can I see what's on your iPod? She's like, no. And I said, I bet you I can tell you what's on it right now. She's like, all right, what is it? I said, you have Brandi Carlile, you have Tegan and Sarah, and you have the Diddy Bops. She's like, oh, you're 3 for 3.
Oh, I don't know the Diddy Bops.
Yeah, another favorite. So, you know, that's just a question I have. What is lesbian music? Why is it that, you know, once you're outed as a lesbian, that suddenly all you can make is lesbian music? And why doesn't why it doesn't apply to men for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe there's an untapped audience of lesbian women like wanting more music, and once they discover an artist, the group, you know, gets excited about it, and then, you know, sort of in the public sphere, it just becomes identified. I don't know. That's,
you think they just have such admiration for one of their own that they all flock, and
I don't know. But I don't, is there there's a female artist I really liked, something O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor?
No. Oh God, I gotta find it now.
Carol O'Connor? Young listeners don't understand that reference, but
Meathead.
Jennifer O'Connor. Do you guys have Jennifer O'Connor?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I don't even know if she's a lesbian or not, but it seemed like a possibility, and I really liked that CD a lot. And so, at least for me, I mean, a lot of that genre, I like quite a few of them, and I really dislike quite a few of them. Like, I just, the Indigo Girls, just it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. I just can't stand it. And what was the other one you mentioned?
Melissa Etheridge?
Yeah. Can't stand Melissa Etheridge. Just can't do it. Katie Lang, I can go either way on.
She had one album I really liked.
Katie Lang?
Yeah. It was.
Are you confusing her with Lyle Lovett?
No. Katie Lang. What was that album?
She
was in like 94. Or
she like swings back and forth. I thought she did like an album of like old standards, like old. Like crooning type of music. Was that the one?
It had the song "Constant Craving" on it. I don't like.
Oh, I remember that song. Yeah,
but that album was really good. I don't know that I'd like it now, but
some of the stuff I've picked to play on here, like stuff like Laura Gibson and Laura Veers and Laura Marling, all the Lauras. Immediately, as soon as you found out, let's say you find out one of them is a lesbian, I think suddenly they become lesbian music. Whereas you wouldn't think of that before. Anyway, I've said the word lesbian now about 840 times in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, you have. So let's start to... So let's play some Brandi Carlile.
Yeah, by the way, and all that being said, she sounds an awful lot like Melissa Etheridge. Like, uh-oh. Like that style. But this is good. So we'll start with Dying Day, which is, I think, the second song off the new album.
And some songs, chasing miles through the nighttime, making tracks with no time for looking back to the place where I belong. How these days grow long, but I'm on my way back home. It's been hard to be away. Sorrows disappear and set your troubles free. It's not fair for me to be this far from you, but I promise to stay true wherever I might be. Time keeps burning, the wheels keep on turning. Sometimes I feel I'm wasting my day.
They had the violin in there, and I looked over at Chris like, oh, now I get it. You know what you might like? You ever hear the Charlie Daniels Band? They have a violin.
They've got a violin.
They call
yeah.
it a fiddle, I think.
That's right. Yep.
What is it?
The Devil Goes Down to Georgia.
Yeah.
Indeed. That's made a comeback in that Geico commercial now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a fiddle and a violin? There isn't one, but it's just sort of what the person
how fast you play it.
Yeah, I think it's
because the fiddle seems to be like really more like a faster playing
But they're the same instrument.
I think it's the same instrument. Yeah.
But if it, I think like if you can watch somebody playing that instrument, and based on what they're wearing, you know what they're going to call it, right?
Oh yeah, yeah,
right.
You
know? Yeah, not
if it's somebody that's dressed up and wearing a tuxedo. That's a violin,
right?
But if it's a guy that's got a big belt buckle, that's a fiddle.
It's a fiddle,
right?
Yeah.
All right. So just having heard that,
I don't know,
lesbian music
grab me.
It's you know, it's that kind of country folk genre that I probably wouldn't go out of my way to listen to, but it wasn't like I didn't have a real negative reaction to it. It didn't hit me like Indigo Girls, but you know, I think with Indigo Girls, like the very first album, at least the first one I heard, I sort of liked, and then I think that caused me a personal backlash when I started to not like them. I started to sort of intensely not like them, but yeah,
sounds like you got some issues to work on.
I think
there.
I do. Yeah, I have some. Got another track for us?
I do. This one is a little bit slower, a little more acoustic. This is If There Was No You.
When I see myself, I'm seeing you too. As long as I remember it, I'm feeling like I knew that my jokes aren't funny. The truth isn't true. If there was no you, if you were my boat in the deep blue sea, I'd probably sink you down. I know I should have thanked you for carrying me, but for you I would happily drown. All along your way, darkest night, the longest day, I know what to say to make you laugh. And nothing you could do could make me turn my back on you. I'm your man. When you need a friend, you got my hand. What I really mean, what I'm trying hard to say, is that I'm counting on you, and you got me too. My secrets aren't safe, I'm singing out of tune. If there was no you, if there was no you,
God, I think I'm starting to hate men now too. I'm gonna punch one of you guys.
That one showcased her vocal talent, that's for sure.
The thing is, her vocal talent is really, there are a couple songs, like especially on the last one, she has kind of a hit, it's called The Story, where she just opens it up and like screams, and it's just unbelievable, like the range that she's got. So,
right, that yeah. One is quite a bit less country. That one could pass for a Feist song or something you'd see on an iPod Nano commercial, almost, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. There actually have been times where I've thought to myself, there aren't really a whole lot of straight males that are my favorite singers. Like, I mean, when you think about, like, you know, Michael Stipe and Bob Mould and Morrissey, and it's like, those damn straight guys, they're just no good.
Right.
Anyway. wait a minute. Don't sample that in.
I was trying to
just start
trying
the,
to come up with an appropriate response, and I just couldn't come up with it.
Start the podcast with that sound clip. All right, fine.
Okay. All right. Well, it's now Barrett's turn in the rotation.
Woo. All right. Well,
what do you have for us, Barrett?
We did, you know, in the grab bag spirit, I was just going to bring in things that I listened to last week. And I did a lot of driving. I went up to Door County and in Wisconsin, and took another trip about an hour north of Madison. And I listened to Joe Jackson's "Look Sharp" a ton, and it's amazing. Speaking, you know, he's gay too.
Joe Jackson
this,
is,
yeah.
What?
So this is like the gay podcast.
I actually went online and looked at like famous gay people, and like Anderson Cooper is on there. Did you know that?
Yeah, I don't know. Is he? I don't know.
Yeah, that's been...
gay people think he's gay.
Yeah, yeah. I've read that that he hasn't disclosed, you know, his sexual preference. So, you know, it's sort of assumed
that he's gay. Like, I haven't disclosed...
Yeah, there's no registry that I've signed.
Do you need to do that now?
When you're a celebrity, you know, it's inevitable that you're going to get asked personal questions, right? So it's going to be somewhere out there that somebody asked, you know, if you're dating somebody or whatever. I mean, it's just, I think it's inevitable when you're a celebrity that it gets asked. If it gets asked and then the response is, I have no comment, then there's the speculation. I think it just happens that way.
So right. If you're Ricky Martin and for a good 10 years, it's only when your career is gone that you can then finally say, I'm free to be a spicy gay Latino male.
I did look up my Joe Jackson library here, Barrett. But
follow up to what I was starting off with was the CD is actually still in my car. I never did eject it, but I do have my son's recording from his album Hairy Butt. It's the title track Hairy Butt.
Should we play that?
We could play that.
I mean, is this your son's creation?
Yes.
Is it like a loop software or something that he did?
Yeah, he made it on GarageBand with his friend Jonah and Jonah's sister Grace. And Grace really deserves a share of the writing credit because she blurted out the song title in there.
Well, we've got to hear a little bit of this,
don't
we?
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of it.
Which track, Barrett? There are four tracks on this.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see.
He must have started out his CD with the title track.
Yeah,
I would think so.
Track one's got to be the hit. Let's listen. That's right up there with the Ypsilanti All-Stars.
Oh, my God. I hope you put away a little money for counseling at some point.
Yeah. He made that all on his own.
No.
Yeah.
I want to hear track two now.
Oh. This one's kind of standard. Try track three. One of them is really funny. This one's called... like Mars Invasion Party in the West. You have to listen to it.
That's great. I love that.
I gotta say, after the last discussion, that's lesbian music.
So, yeah, we did listen to that a lot, too. Because you put it in, and he wants to hear it a couple of times. And
yeah.
I don't want to pop it out.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. So we listened to that album about, I don't know, probably about four times. And it's not very long. But
EP. It's a four-and-a-half-minute EP.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I was going to play some Joe Jackson from Look Sharp. And people that don't know much Joe Jackson aside from Night and Day are really missing out, I think. His first couple of albums are just incredible.
Yeah, they really are. I don't have that one, unfortunately.
So, I don't have that, but on my iPod I do have a song called Don't Want to Be Like That. I think it's on I'm the Man from about 1980. So, Let's have a listen.
Oh,
You know what that sounds like a little bit? It sounds like the Jam.
Yeah, kinda. I can hear the bass.
Yeah.
And it's got that sound. I agree. I never really thought about it that way, but I love that song. I saw Joe Jackson. I've seen him a couple times, and first time was here in Madison. And as they explained at the show, like just a couple of days before, or even the day of, whatever, like real shortly before the concert, his guitar player got sick and couldn't play. So he's like, okay, I have to come up with new arrangements for these songs. And he pulled it off, and it was incredible. I mean, he's not just an average musician. He's not that it means anything, but a classically trained piano player, and just a great arranger and songwriter and stuff like that. I think he's only really remembered by most people for Night and Day, but he did have a song in a Taco Bell commercial recently. You guys remember that? One more time. One more. It was like a.
Oh, I remember the song.
Taco Bell commercial. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's Joe Jackson too.
Yeah, I'm not really all that familiar with, you know, the early stuff, but I mean, Steppin' Out is one of those songs that, you know, listening to my AM radio as a little kid, I mean, when I hear that song, I can place, you know, the exact time and place of where I was when I was listening to it.
Right.
And there are a bunch of songs like that. So, like that and Rick Springfield's Jesse's Girl.
Yeah.
Like I can, it all comes back to me like right at once.
They're similar in that they both remind you of being young, is what you're saying, right? Or do they? Are you saying? Here's a little bit of that.
This has got to be 82?
Yeah, and this is from about 82 when, you know...
good year for the Brewers.
Very good year
it
for
was.
The Brewers. The year when some of the modern-day Brewers were born. But this is what people remember. And this is, you know, from like 79 until this. You know, he was really kind of a post-punk pioneer. And he and Elvis Costello and Graham Parker were all, you know, and Nick Lowe. I mean, these guys were all kind of in the same vein. And, this got so big that it just kind of overshadowed what he did before.
It's interesting when you think about the Jam sound and kind of the punky guitar sound, and then he's doing this sequenced synthesizer piano thing. It's a lot different, but he does both styles really well.
Right, and this 82 is about when Elvis Costello did Imperial Bedroom, which has that same kind of sound as this. Didn't get quite as big, but... and obviously Elvis Costello was a lot more prolific after that than Joe Jackson was.
I did see Joe Jackson myself in concert.
See, now this is why I love the grab bag. I just pull out whatever you like, whatever you've been listening to, and now I'll probably go back and listen to a lot of this stuff.
I had a roommate in college who was a big fan of Joe Jackson, and so he got me to go, and I kind of like Joe Jackson, but I wouldn't have just gone out to see him live, and I liked it a lot. And it was sort of like you said, Barrett, he some bands you see and they're sort of an attitude band and not a musicianship band. Like if you went to see the Replacements, you know, they'd just be thrashing their instruments. They wouldn't be trying to make like a real, you know, presentation of musicianship, whereas Joe Jackson, he was like, you could just tell it was very, he's a very meticulous musician.
You may have crossed a line with Barrett on the Replacements. Or would you agree with that?
Well, they were kind of, you know, their shows were kind of a shamble.
I never saw them live, but I sure read about them a lot.
I saw them a couple of times. Yeah. And the first time, I guess they were really drunk, but I was really drunk. It was like the third date with my now wife or something.
Wow.
No, it wasn't the third date. The third, that was ridiculous. It was the first year. So we, you know, but...
she must have been really drunk if she agreed to go out with you.
Yeah, totally. She was behind me, like, you know, sort of had her arms around me, and I fell backwards on top of her. So that was the first, and I think Chris Mars fell over his drum set in much the same way. And then we saw their last concert at Grant Park in Chicago, which was terrible. Wow. They were not into it by that time. So that's a little Joe Jackson stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. That's fun to pull that one out. Well, I'm going to go back to something new. I'm going to talk about Tokyo Police Club. This was like, I think I really root for these guys because they were the first band that my son and I kind of liked together. We both really liked their EP from, I don't know, it must have been about 4 or 5 years ago called, no, it couldn't have been that long ago. Well, maybe 4 years ago. It was called A Lesson in Crime. And it was really catchy pop punk kind of stuff. And they've now put out their second full-length album called Champ. And it's still doesn't have quite the punch and the edge that the first EP had, but still some really good, catchy power pop. And they just seem like really nice guys, so you really want them to succeed. In fact, I'm going to go see them at Summerfest this week, so I'll be able to report on next week's podcast. So let's play some Tokyo Police Club. The new album is called Champ. And I'm going to play track 2 called Favorite Color.
The day that your brother started to talk was the day that I found you like that. The national child star in a coat and a scarf along the laundromat. Now we got the keys to an apartment we share, and we stare up as late as we'd like. Like keys.
Tokyo Police Club, bunch of nice guys from the Toronto, Canada area.
The reference in that song to Casey and JoJo were of two members of the band Jodeci, who were an early 90s like boy band type. They were like, there was Boys to Men, and then like Jodeci came along, and they were a little edgier.
So, wow, that's cool that you picked up on that one.
Out? Wow.
It was grown up listening to it.
Yeah.
It was popular at the time, so I know who Casey and JoJo are. And actually, no, I believe they are from Charlotte, North Carolina. So there you go.
It's hard to stump Chris, isn't it?
Beat that, hipsters.
You think you've got an obscure reference, and Chris gets it anyway.
Wow. Yeah. Casey and JoJo.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah. Go get Jodeci's album.
Jodeci.
Yeah. I tried to...
Should I really do that, or are you just saying that?
No, don't get it.
Okay.
I tried to lure many a young lady into my dorm room in college with Jodeci. It blew up magnificently. It
seems like it maybe should have. Okay. And they show a little bit of versatility on this one. I think that probably is a typical track for them. But sometimes they can slow it down and actually do it pretty well. So here's an example. It's called Hands Reversed.
For a crime, you gotta shoot me up and tie.
greatest of the champions is the hedonistic hell. Made of paper and glue, your Rubik's Cube. You can buy it in cans, tin cans. You were always the first, but I think you got your hands reversed. Hands reversed. Hands reversed. And cool for sure. Watching your weekends and your holidays come by, trying to come.
There you go.
What does your son think of the new one? Does he listen to it?
I think he kind of likes it. I think I think the first one, you know, he liked so much that they'll never be able to match it. Their first full-length album was called Elephant Shell, and he didn't like that one quite as much as the first EP. But, you know, he liked it reasonably well, and this one I think he likes reasonably well, too. Same with me. And I'm looking forward to seeing them. We saw them together when he was 10, and they came to the to Union South, you know, in that cafeteria.
Club 770.
Yeah. It was basically just the student cafeteria, but then they named it Club 770, so it would sound like a music club.
Barrett and I saw Ted Leo and the Pharmacist there.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was cool, though, because we were the oldest and youngest person. You know, here's me in my 40s, and my son was 10, and everyone else was 20, you know,
so, right,
or 22 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I like their first their first EP a lot, like, you know, just the hyperkinetic energy, and I don't know if I like them as much, just kind of slowed down. So
they've become a little more, you know, just of a pop band and less of that frenetic, punchy, punky stuff. Yeah. But I like it. I like it. Reasonably well. So it'll be interesting to see how it translates live, so we'll let you know next week. So, Chris, got another pick?
I do have another pick, as a matter of fact. This band is kind of a band for fans of the Thermals. Are you a Thermals guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Before there were the Thermals, there was a little pop band called Hutch and Kathy. Featuring Hutch Harris, I believe is his name, and Kathy Foster. And they hailed from Portland, Oregon, and just kind of put together this one little album, and it's got a real rough feel to it, like it's, you know, it was probably recorded in someone's basement. But I think it's a really great little, you know, kind of a pocket pop album that they did some really good work here. It's nothing like the Thermals, which is kind of more aggressive, guitar-driven rock. This is just kind of got some really, like, you know, little pop gems on it. So
are they members of the Thermals?
Yes, they became the Thermals later and went on to more stardom with on the Sub Pop label. I don't even know what label this is on, but it's really hard to find. This is from the album Hutch and Kathy. This first song is In Brilliance.
It's open wide, we've got no reason to be hiding. Your sight is crashed, you found my glasses in the trash can. And through the lenses you can see what I have thrown away. I've seen your eyes coated in ice, and only you can melt and focus. Our eyes unite, we are on. Burning so bright, shining so high, we are on the sun. Our eyes unite in a terrible climb and a beautiful fall.
Yeah, I mean, it's got just got kind of catchy little songs like that all the way through from front to back. And I just really like it. It's from 2002, I think. So I pulled it out from the vault.
The Wayback Machine.
Yeah. The
kids remember that?
Grab 2002. Grab bag, suckers.
Wow. 2002. Things were different back then.
Right. Still an nation innocence.
Right. Right. A youthful nation.
Right. Yeah. Still working on the Constitution, I think.
Right. The ink was not dried yet. Yeah. Some of those signatures.
John Adams, big on Hutch and Kathy. Right. Actually, yeah.
One more track, Chris?
Yes. This would be another similar song, and it's called You're On.
Hey, it must be today that I can see through, that I can see through. Hey, it must be today that I can see through.
Have we discovered someone who has a little bit of that Colin Malloy kind of vocal delivery?
Yeah, and
it's a little bit.
They're both from Portland as well, so I think that might be like the Portland style.
You know who was reminding me of that this past week? Something I've been listening to actually, the Daredevil Christopher Wright.
Oh,
which Chris told us about two weeks ago. I kind of like that album. It keeps asking me to play it again. You know, and I haven't completely even kind of grabbed onto it, but it's like it stays on the list, like I've got to come back to it. And he's got a little bit of that Colin Malloy thing, right, too.
It sounds like a really complicated relationship you have with this
album.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
Like, it wants me to make it a sandwich, but I don't know.
It hasn't become part of my body yet, though.
Yeah, well, I have to credit my buddy Johnny Roast Beef for turning me on to Hutch and Kathy, so thanks, Beef.
Nice.
It's good. Obscure pick. So, Barrett, you got to have something else for us.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? Will and I are both pretty old, and Chris is not a baby, but he's not as old as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And Will and I think a lot of times will cite certain bands as being influential in things that we hear today, but we never really play those things. And one of them is The Jam. We talk about The Jam quite a bit, and we just did today.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd play a Jam song, one of my favorites. So I'm going to play a song called Saturday's Kids on their album Setting Suns, and I'm guessing that was about 1981.
Results, afternoon tea in the light of night. Check out the ghost.
Yeah, to me, The Jam is one of the most British sounding of all bands. You know, not just the vocals, but everything about them is unmistakably British.
Yeah, you would not, you know, get mistaken that they're from North Carolina or something. No, and
The Clash, pretty British.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Just throwing them in there.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not saying this is the only band that sounds British.
No, I...
but, like...
It just popped into my head.
Well, yeah, that's another great example.
Paul Weller, of course, being the leader of The Jam, and he's still putting stuff out. But, you know, he's never really done anything solo that really sounds like The Jam.
He's got that soul thing going on.
Yeah.
And late period Jam sounds like a combination of The Jam and then the Style Council, which he formed in about 83.
Yeah.
After he broke up The Jam. And some of that stuff is pretty good, and some of it's really, really wussy. And his... but his solo stuff has been kind of, you know, there's none of it that I love,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I pretty much love all the Jam albums.
The first Jam album I had was Sound Effects.
Yeah, that's
and that's
great
such
one.
A great album. So you mind if I play one?
Yeah,
I'm
go
stealing
for
your band, but this is such a great song. The first two tracks are just unbelievable, but I'm gonna play track two. This is called Monday.
That's another good one. Another great one.
Yeah, I hate to overuse the term, but the term classic comes to mind.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
Yep.
Yeah, and see, again, and the beauty of the grab bag. See, now all the younger listeners are going to be able to go back and see the influences, what they were like. There was actually I've got a friend of mine. He's like, I think, 23, 24, and I think he wants to be a music writer. Mm-hmm. And he came to me. He was man enough to come to me. He's like, look, I want to be a music writer, but honestly, I don't know anything about the Smiths. So could you help me out? What do I need to listen to and all that stuff? And, you know, some people would be like, oh, my God, you don't know anything about the Smiths? But I was, like, so psyched that he would come to me, like, so honored. And I was so excited to go through and, like, pick out all the songs that I wanted to play for him and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, he's, say he's 23 years old.
Yeah.
That'd be like me when I was 23 years old, asking some guy, like, hey, I want to be a music writer, but I don't know anything about whatever, the Quicksilver Messenger Service.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a historic band in his eyes, not...
Yeah, I mean,
anything
think yeah.
that any of his peers listened to, or
but if you really wanted to be a music writer, I mean, wouldn't you be kind of embarrassed? I mean, wouldn't you just be like... Everybody assumes that you should already know all this kind of stuff.
Well,
everybody's got their weaknesses.
I mean, if he's in his early 20s, you know, he wasn't even born when, you know, the Smiths' biggest stuff came out.
Yeah.
So.
Like, I've got two glaring weaknesses in my catalog and just my understanding. Blur and Pulp.
I don't have those either. I have a Jarvis
so
Cocker album
big.
Though.
Yeah, I do have I do have a couple of Blurs, and I've got Jarvis Cocker, and you know that I got from Steven and stuff.
But
I really miss
that Blur.
I don't think
so. Oh, that's a good one. I like that song. It's catchy.
No, that's not them, is it?
I think
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, the
it's
one
like
that goes
song
woo-hoo.
13 or something.
No,
they play at sports arenas everywhere now.
Oh yeah.
Wow, okay. Dun, well, then maybe dun, I don't. Dun, dun, then dun, I don't dun, feel dun, so dun, bad.
Woo-hoo!
I'm pretty sure that's not those one of those bands.
I don't have it, but I think you're right, Chris.
Did you type in woohoo? See if it
No, I typed blur.
You just yelled woohoo at the computer.
And I typed blur, and I have no blur in my catalog. Yeah.
But, you know, so everybody's got their little
missing,
their little blind spots.
Yeah.
You guys have a rap blind spot, I think.
I have a rap blind spot.
I've got a lot of rap in the mental catalog. So
I think Barrett has a heavy metal blind spot.
I have a heavy metal blind spot, big time.
Yeah. No Chris, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest.
No.
Yeah, see, that's kind of my... As much as I've professed my love for the metal arts, I still have kind of... You know, that was just a little bit before my time. I mean, I loved Van Halen, but like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and those guys, just a little before my time, I think. I've never gone back to... So, yeah, I mean, like, those bands are probably, to me, like, you know, the Smiths are for my buddy. Like,
right.
Just a little before his time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going on long again, you guys. I think maybe it's time to call it a podcast.
Hopefully we've ameliorated some of your blind spots tonight.
Yeah. We're little by little, we're just filling in the listeners' blanks so that they're a little bit more enriched every week.
I did have one more I was planning to play, but how about if we say goodbye and let the people listen to it? As they're
on the way out?
On the way
out. Yeah, we could do that.
Exit music
for
a film.
Okay, what's it going to be?
So we've talked a lot about bands that sound like Interpol and the Editors that sound like Joy Division. And I'll always throw in there, you know, I also hear a little bit of Echo and the Bunnymen. And usually when I do that, Will looks at me like, I don't hear that maybe, but...
Even though Echo and the Bunnymen were one of my favorite bands, I mean, just absolute all-time favorites.
There's just something about Ian McCullough's delivery and about something in the music that I hear in some of these other bands. So, anyway, let's play a song called The Killing Moon, which might be that's probably their biggest song.
I have two versions of that one. I have the obscure version from the Seven Seas single. Then I have the album version. I guess we should play the album version.
Yeah, let's play that one.
Okay, we'll say goodnight on with some Echo and the Bunnymen music. So that means now we must say our goodnights. Good night.
Good night, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on when you're listening. Good morning. Good evening.
I bid you adieu, my friends.